I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Reaction Podcast. I'm your host, William Liu. This episode, along with every episode of the Raptors Over Everything Podcast, this season is sponsored by KFC. So I'm recapping the Toronto Raptors 110-102 loss to the Dallas Mavericks on Saturday night. I don't want to make any excuses, and I want to give the Mavericks full credit. They play like a team, honestly. Like, even slander aside, they play like a team that had some pride because they had just gotten swept by the Knicks. So, you know, they had a lot to play for. Obviously, the last game they played, national TV, Porzingis goes back to New York City, and they get dropped by the Knicks for the second time in like a week. So this is a team that badly needed a win. This is a team that looked like a one-man team. It looked like Doncic was the only guy. Porzingis wasn't really stepping up. And so when they finally came home, they needed to do something to reverse their trend. And you know what? Credit to them. They played well defensively. They came up with a pretty good game plan. You know, Maxi Kleber circumstances really helped them in terms of the way the referees officiated this game with respect to what you can get away with in terms of guarding in the post. But, you know, Kleber played a pretty good game defensively against Pascal. I thought Rick Carlisle made some good adjustments, especially when the Raptors Nick Nurse actually got the best of Rick Carlisle, I think, in the first half. When he pulled out of the zone, he pulled out a box and one, you know, kind of really allowed the Raptors to sort of erase an early gap and actually take the lead. And so full credit to the Mavericks. You know, this is not, even though the Raptors are real shorthanded, this has not been a team that has been easy to beat. The Raptors are hardly a pushover. They just beat the Trailblazers. They beat the Lakers. They competed with the Clippers all the way down to the fourth quarter. And honestly, this is kind of a similar game in terms of how the Mavericks game went as compared to the Clipper game, in the sense that the Raptors kind of just ran out of gas. And I don't want to use that excuse twice in the span of like 4 days, but like, you know, this team's tired. This team's just tired. You know, I think a lot of circumstances played into this one. You know, in terms of the scheduling, it's just difficult. Like, the Raptors are on a 5-game road trip on the West Coast. This is the last leg, and they've been shorthanded. Guys like Pascal Siakam, this is his fourth straight game of playing 41 or more minutes. And so when you kind of take on that kind of load, it's just difficult to get a result, especially on the last leg of that road trip. And you've been on the road. The Raptors have played one of the hardest schedules in the NBA to start the season when you factor in sort of how many road games they played and the quality of opposition they played. So, you know, they've succeeded despite the odds, but it felt very much like the odds kind of caught up to them, but kind of similar to the Clipper game in the sense that the Raptors played defensively not bad. The Mavericks are a very, very good offensive club. They have a very dynamic, one of the most dynamic offensive players in the NBA in Luka Doncic, who really showed what he can do today. Even in a night where he wasn't shooting the ball well, he made a number of highlight plays to sort of just generate offense for his team. And, you know, they've got a pretty good coach who sets them up to succeed. They share the ball. They have a lot of players that are on the perimeter. Like, they're pretty much five out at all times. And so this is a difficult team offensively to corral. So the fact that the Raptors even held the Mavericks to 110 points on a night where the Raptors are real tired, I'm kind of impressed. Like, you know, if you told me before the game the Mavericks would shoot 42% from the field, I'd take it. Now, where the Mavericks succeeded on offense is getting to the foul line. They got to the foul line for 33 free throw attempts as compared to 15 for the Raptors. I'll kind of talk about why in a bit. But obviously, when you surrender 33 free throw attempts, that's not great. And also, the Mavericks just missed a whole bunch of open threes. Like, every time Porzingis took a jumper, it was actually kind of a huge win for the Raptors. Even though we know Porzingis is a good shooter. But, you know, for the most part, I thought the Raptors, at least defensively, gave themselves a chance to win it. And really, it was just, it came down to, you know, missed shots that were makeable. Again, if you had more energy, I think the Raptors make a lot more of these shots. Like, we've seen the way Pascal can score. Like, I, you know, Again, I want to give credit to Kleber, but also at the same time, I've seen Pascal. It's not like Kleber was doing something that Pascal has never seen in his life. A lot of players have gone physical with Pascal. A lot of players have sort of played him on the spin and forced him more towards his offhand, although he doesn't really have an offhand nowadays. And I've seen nights where Pascal struggle with his jumper. Like tonight, for example, 2 of 10 from three-point range. But the fact that even Pascal even took 10 threes is actually a reflection of his lack of aggressiveness. You know, he just looked tired. He really just looked tired. There's a number of times when he was going ISO in the post against guys like Dorian Finney-Smith and Maxi Kleber, and he was just leaving the layup short. And so many times he would spin, get open, get to a shot, and then just miss point blank. And, you know, that wasn't just Pascal. Like, Norm had 3 missed layups right on the rim, even though Norm had a really good game. It's actually funny to think that even on a night where Norm pretty much had his best game of the season, there are still things you look at it like, why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? I think we do sometimes are a lot harder on Norm than we are on other players. But, you know, Pascal just, he couldn't get it done. I mean, look, the man shot 6 of 24. You're not going to win a lot of Raptor games, even with a healthy roster, when Pascal shoots 6 of 24, especially when he also gives you 5 turnovers, 4 fouls. You know, if you want even more signs of fatigue for Pascal, like he had 1 rebound for like a lot of the game. 1 single rebound. Meanwhile, the Mavericks are crashing on the glass. They're not even a team that goes for that many offensive rebounds, but, you know, Porzingis was really hurting them. DeLon Wright hurt them a couple times. You know, I miss DeLon. I do miss him. I really liked watching him as a Raptor. So it was very painful that DeLon was the guy that was actually killing them a lot in the fourth quarter with hustle plays like stealing the inbound or like, you know. I mean, the Raptors just looked tired, man. Like they turned the ball over inbounding the ball under the basket, and DeLon was able to get a layup. Like, you know, Pascal leaving the pass short, like one of the last plays of the game. They run Pascal off a high screen, sort of very similar to the way the Raptors used to run that play for Kyle Lowry or even occasionally DeMar DeRozan, where out of the timeout, they would get a screen really, really high up the floor, like half court. They inbound to the back court to whoever they're trying to get to score and have them go full speed around that screen and get a full head of steam against a backtracking defender. And they ran that for Pascal. In years past, they ran it for Kyle. And I think they actually ran that exact play for DeMar when he dunked on Anthony Tolliver and ended his life, like ended his whole entire life. But yeah, I mean, so Pascal ran that play. Pascal looked mad slow on that. And I would never say Pascal looked slow, but tonight he really was very physically slow. And then to make matters worse, you know, he jumped in the air and he threw this pass backwards against his momentum. And he left it like 3 feet short, and Doncic was able to pick it off after he had the foul. And that was basically the game. So, you know, Pascal was tired. Pascal was exhausted. And this is where, again, the free throw disparity hurts, because the way the refereeing crew decided to officiate tonight's game was that they were not going to call any fouls in the post. None. And, of course, that favors the defense in this case. That favors the Mavericks a lot more because they're not a team that posts up that much. Even like Porzingis, his 7'3" ass gets into the post and takes a turnaround jumper every time. So, like, it doesn't really affect him. Meanwhile, the Raptors are definitely trying to go into the post with Pascal. That's the easiest way for him to get a shot. And normally when you got him in single coverage, as we saw in the Portland game just before this, you know, Pascal's going to get a bucket, but today it wasn't happening. There were no KFC buckets for Pascal today. He looked like he was tired, you know. And so, you know, the referees were allowing guys like Kleber and Dorian Finney-Smith to basically do whatever. Like, honestly, I don't know. You know, my main thing with referees is, like, if you keep it consistent, you call it one way, then I'm kind of cool with it, right? It's up to you as a player to adjust. And so on that part, I think Pascal didn't do a great job of adjusting. And, you know, he could have made life a lot easier for himself if he had mixed in a couple more jumpers. Of course, when you're tired, most of your jumpers are going to be short. And that's what happened tonight. I mean, the 2 of 10 from deep, I mean, just oof. And some mid-range shots mixed into that, so it was pretty bad. But I mean, like, yeah, he just wasn't getting to the foul call. He wasn't getting bailed out. And I would say, you know, it wasn't a game that was necessarily super dominated by free throws, but, you know, on the other end, there were definitely some lighter calls that favored Doncic. Now, Doncic is not really a post-up guy. He can do it if he needs to, but for the most part, he's a pick-and-roll guy going downhill. And, you know, when he slides through those gaps and there's those bang-bang plays, like, a lot of times Doncic is getting bailed out, whereas Pascal wasn't. But again, that's just how the referees were calling it. You know, there were no foul calls in the post. The only one that they got was Marc Gasol got a pity call trying to post up Kristaps Porzingis, which I'm like, what are you doing, Mark? Just shoot the three-pointer. Stay on the perimeter. I don't know why they keep insisting on him posting up. It just doesn't seem to be an effective part of his game anymore, and it hasn't been since he's been a Raptor. But, yeah, you know, Pascal wasn't getting bailed out. You know, I guess credit to him for not picking up a tech. Because I've seen a lot of games, for example, where, you know, in the past, DeMar DeRozan wouldn't get his foul call. You know, obviously, him getting into the middle of the mid-range area, stopping, then pump faking, leaning into a guy, throwing up a shot, being mad, yelling at the referee, not getting back on defense. There wasn't a lot of that from Pascal, so I'm happy. But at the same time, you know, the one thing you got to give DeMar credit for is he took it on the chin as a number one guy, you know. You gotta show up. You gotta give what you have, and you kind of aren't afforded a bad night, really. And Pascal tonight was definitely very bad. Even defensively, he was slow. Like there were three or four times Pascal just had guys blow past him, line drive blow bys, like guys like Dorian Finney-Smith, and those guys aren't even good. So you know, it's understandable too. Again, this is the fourth straight game with Pascal scoring or averaging like 40 minutes. You know, he's had to carry so much of the load offensively, and yeah, it catches up to you. You know, I'm sure he needs, I know they had 2 days off to sort of recharge, but it just didn't seem like he had it tonight. The referees definitely didn't play to his advantage, and also, you know, credit the Mavs again, they played pretty damn good defense. You know, like, you know, there's one thing to not call any foul calls and another thing to hold the best transition scoring team in the NBA, in the Toronto Raptors, to no transition points in the whole entire second half. Like, that's impressive. That's a sign of the Mavericks' compete level on defense. You know, like, obviously, like I mentioned earlier, they just lost twice to the Knicks, so they really need to come home and actually give a good effort, and they did. They gave a great effort, so you got to give them credit. But Pascal wasn't delivering, and this is a lesson that he's going to have to learn. Like, as a number one guy, you literally can't have off nights. You know, when he had an off night against the Blazers, against the Bucks, they lost. When he had an off night tonight against the Mavs, they lost. So it is what it is. It is what it is. Especially when Serge and Kyle aren't there to sort of carry you and sort of, you know, make life easier for you by extending leads or holding leads or, you know, whatever. It just makes it even more tougher. And so Pascal couldn't get it done. They got a couple guys that did get it done. I thought, again, like I mentioned earlier, this was Norm's best performance of the season. 26 points in 32 minutes for Norman Powell. 9 of 15 from the field. 6 of 8 from deep. That's actually a career high in terms of made three-pointers. Also added 6 rebounds and assists to Seal. Yeah, I thought Norm was great. He really played within the flow of the offense, you know. And you know, it, to a large extent, he kind of picked up a lot of the missed scoring for Pascal. You know, Norm, this is a guy who it's almost hard to predict what he's going to do on a night-to-night basis because you never know if he's going to force his offense and sort of run into traffic or if he's going to, you know, take the shots that are there and sort of slowly build his rhythm by, you know, taking good shots instead of trying to force everything. But yeah, I don't know. Norm had a great game today. Like, he started out decent, took some open threes, hit them. You know, the Mavericks also kind of disrespected Norm in a way because they switched their guard rotation so that defensively they had a bigger player in Dorian Finney-Smith, who's more of like a 6'7", kind of like an Andre Roberson kind of shooting guard where he doesn't shoot but he plays defense. And he took, you know, Rick Carlisle took Dorian Finney-Smith and he put him on Fred VanVleet. Meanwhile, you know, Seth Curry was on Norman Powell, and obviously Seth Curry is not a positive defender. And so, you know, the Mavericks are already conceding that, look, Norm is less of a threat than Fred. And so it was good on Norm that he capitalized on that. He hit some open threes, like I said, early on. He had a transition bucket, took it end-to-end for a layup. And so, you know, he was in a rhythm all night. He was taking good shots. Even the shots he was missing were good shots, I thought. Just layups that he left short, you know, inexplicably Norm will do that, but for the most part he's gotten a lot better with his finishing over the years. And he hit some big threes in the fourth quarter there to give the Raptors at least a little bit of a chance of, I don't know, competing and maybe stealing it at the end. Norm hit a 4-point play, which was real cool. I think he missed a free throw, but still, he got fouled on a three and he made it, so not bad. And again, I just wish Norm could do this more often. If he did this more often, you know, there is a case for him to start. There really is. Like, there, you know, he is his pure scoring ability. If we're just talking about like his ability to shoot, his ability to make the in-between plays, his ability to get to the basket, his transition play, the pure scoring skill is there. It's just the judgment usually isn't. And so tonight the judgment was good. He made and he made a good share of shots. So I'm really happy for Norm. Hopefully he sort of extends this type of play. You know, against the Blazers, he was invisible. And then tonight he has a great game. It's just hard to know what you're going to get on a night-to-night basis with Norm. So that's why he's sort of stuck on the bench, especially when everyone is healthy. But right now he's in the starting lineup. And if there is a case to start Norm, which would be pretty hard to see Norm starting over Fred, just because I think Fred is a better player. But if there is a case, he needs to show it now. And I think there are things that do help him when he's in the starting lineup. Like, I think him playing with Mark really does help. Like, your KFC bucket of the game was, you know, in a tight spot. Nick Nurse calls timeout. I think the Raptors are bleeding points. They're down like 7 or 8 points. You know, the Mavericks are threatening to pull away. And out of the timeout, the Raptors run a classic play where they get the ball inbounded to Mark at, you know, the high post, or even maybe at the three-point arc at the top of the floor, to drag the big center out of the lanes, because Mark obviously is a threat to shoot. And they get one guy curling to the basket, another guy flaring out to the three-point line, and Mark delivered a great pass on Norman Powell, who was cutting inside, got a layup, and that just, you know, stopped the run and gave the Raptors a bit of an advantage. Now, granted, the Raptors squandered that advantage on the ensuing play, because Marc Gasol got the rebound and threw an outlet pass right to a Mavericks player, and he scored. So that sucked. But at least, you know, in terms of the coaching there, I'm pretty happy that Nick Nurse is able to dial it up out of the timeout. And I do think, generally speaking, there is a connection there between Norman Powell and Marc Gasol. Like, you know, if they run that play, and they run that play a lot, where a guy curls to the basket, one guy flares to the three-point arc, while, you know, Mark is holding the ball and directing traffic. You know, Norm's very good at cutting. Norm's very good at cutting. You know, he's good at finishing. They don't usually put a big defender on him, and Mark's good at, you know, passing. You know, that's the thing. Norm likes to shoot. Mark likes to pass. It kind of makes sense they play more minutes together. You know, the way the bench rotation is, they don't get to share that much time. And so maybe Nick should look into, you know, when Serge is back and stuff like that, maybe look into pairing Mark more with Norman, because it seems like that's a better combo than Norm and Serge, because Serge really is creating for himself. He's not really creating for others. So it's not as natural of a pairing. But yeah, you know, I'm happy for Norm. I liked his effort tonight, and he was a big reason why the Raptors were even able to compete into the fourth quarter, because otherwise the Raptors weren't getting a lot of half-court scoring. The other guy who was very positive tonight, Fred VanVleet, 24 points, 5 rebounds, 7 assists, a steal, 8 of 18 shooting from the field, 4 of 11 from deep in 39 minutes. I'm not going to really look at the minus 22 number, because it's really surprising to me that he was a minus 22, whereas, like, you know, Pascal was a plus 3. I don't think that's a very, you know, telling number. I think it's just unfortunate circumstances. But I thought Fred on the whole played really well. You know, he made a lot of great defensive plays in terms of just helping out, you know, crashing the glass when needed, chipping in. And offensively, I thought he showed leadership, you know, in a way where, you know, the way I kind of look at it is, you know, even with the Kyle and DeMar teams, you know, you got one guy in Kyle who is able to set the table, able to make momentum shifting plays, be opportunistic, and you know, give the Raptors the lead, or, you know, bring the Raptors back. That was usually what Kyle did in the fourth quarter, was you know, extend leads or make comebacks. And then usually the guy to close it out and finish the shots after the game was close was DeMar DeRozan. Now, obviously, Kyle did a lot of that as well, because Kyle was a very, very special player and remains a very special player. But, you know, for the most part, the role usually fell to DeMar. And I thought today, for example, Fred made a number of Kyle Lowry-esque plays where, you know, he hit a pull-up three. He got this, you know, loose ball, and he pushed in transition, made this great assist. And that kind of stuff really allowed the Raptors to stay close in a game where they really had no business of being in, given the way they were playing, and, you know, in the fourth quarter there. But, yeah, you know, that's Fred. And I think it's really encouraging that he looks more and more like Kyle Lowry as the game goes on. I don't think he's as good as Kyle Lowry. I've seen this entire run by Kyle Lowry the last like 6-7 years. He's been phenomenal, and it takes a lot to get to the level. But Fred, honestly, it's like a Kyle in training, and I think that's what you want, right? Like, if I had my druthers, I would want Kyle Lowry to be my point guard forever. But obviously, you know, that's not possible due to age. But if you can pass that baton off to Fred, and Fred can do a lot of things that Kyle does in terms of, you know, playing up a bigger than his size defensively, hitting timely threes, being able to set up his teammates, being a good facilitator. You know, I think Fred has taken a lot of steps. And I think today, you know, the defense, the Mavericks definitely did pay attention to Fred. Like I said, they put the more difficult defender on him and Finney-Smith. And Fred was able to still capitalize. You know, he had two huge threes in the fourth quarter. He hit a darting layup. And generally speaking, he was competing and he was doing everything he can. But he's just not a takeover kind of closer. So, well, I mean, unless he's going up against Quinn Cook in Game 6 of the NBA Finals. But, you know, whatever. Aside from that, he's not really a takeover type of closer. But, you know, he did everything he could to keep the Raptors in the game, and I respect Fred for it. And then the only other guy I really want to highlight is Matt Thomas, who I want a nickname right now, Asian Expectations, because every shot we have, we expect him, honestly, to hit 99% every time. But, yeah, Matt Thomas, man, the Asian Expectation. You know, he was 4-of-4 to start the game, 3-of-3 in the second quarter there where the Raptors – that's probably where they play their best basketball, when they beat the Mavericks 38-21. Whoa. Wow. I guess watching live, I didn't even notice that. So, yeah, obviously that was a massive quarter for the Raptors to win that by 17. And a lot of that was Matt Thomas, the Asian Expectation, who hit three very impressive shots. You know, one where he came off the screen or he dribbled past his guy and he sort of leaned in. Because the thing is, he's not going to generate much separation from his guy. Like, even if he makes a move or whatever, like, defenses are going to close down on you. They're usually bigger than him, more athletic than him, longer than him. So he's not going to get open for very long. But he made the most of it. You know, the first shot he hit, leaning, floating towards the basket, running bank shot from like 15 feet. It was a very, very difficult shot. The degree of difficulty on that was very high. Second shot he made, mid-range shot, dribbled past the three-point arc and got some space, launched it from 20 feet, a hand right in his face, almost blocked the shot, swish. And then third shot, kick out to the corner, defense rotates over, I think it was Kleba, and Thomas sidesteps, takes a dribble, and this was a sidestep, relocation three. Kleba, though, even though he, you know, even though Matt Thomas sidestepped, Kleba was still able to get a hand up, and so it was still contested. Matt Thomas switches that, and then I think in the third quarter there, maybe that was also in the second quarter, I'm not sure, but, you know, Matt Thomas rises up for three, and off of sort of a broken sequence, and Marc Gasol, you know, is screening for him. Marc Gasol gets run over by Kleba on one of the few times the referees actually called a foul on him, and it was a four-point play. So, you know, Matt Thomas, he has that effect. I mean, last episode in the win against the Blazers, where he didn't actually play that well, I think he only shot like 1-of-6. I said, you know, I want to see Matt Thomas aggressively hunt for a shot. Even though there are bad shots for everyone else, I want to see an elite shooter take those, because when you're an elite shooter, you need the mentality of putting pressure on the defense, attacking the defense, regardless of the results. You want your movement, your aggression to make the defense think twice, make the defense overreact, and that's how you create opportunities for everyone else. It's one thing to just hit wide open catch and shoot jumpers. We know Matt Thomas can do that. We know he's 99% on those. But we also need to see him expand his role, because, you know, you're not that effective as a shooter if you're only going to take like three shots a game. So I like that he's moving around more. And I think it's just he's adapting to the physicality of the NBA. It's a big transition between that versus what he was used to seeing in Europe or in college. It's just different. Like when you watch highlights of him playing at like Valencia, he's bodying people and creating so much separation just off simple cuts. And that just doesn't happen in the NBA unless it's like against a lazy defense or whatever. But, you know, it's just not going to consistently work for you in the NBA. You know, defenders are longer, stronger, tougher. They have a physical advantage over Matt Thomas. And so he needs to, you know, again, study a lot of JJ Redick tape, study a lot of, I mean, Redick is probably the best guy from the look at, because like even a guy like Kyle Korver, Kyle Korver is like 6'7", 6'8". Like he can just rise up over a lot of guys. So that's a little bit different. But, you know, I think even guys like JJ, I think guys like Patty Mills, I think guys like Marco Bellinelli, like these guys, especially about Bellinelli. Bellinelli doesn't have elite athleticism. You know, he throws down the occasional dunk or whatever, but he doesn't have elite athleticism, but he's so good at attacking a gap in the defense, and then, like, if he needs to, leaning, fading, floating, like, just whatever. It's hitting shots off balance or seemingly off balance, unorthodox type of movement, and still making the shot. So I liked what Matt Thomas showed today, and I think he gave the Raptors a boost. And I think this is his role, like, especially when the Raptors are down, come into the game, hit a couple shots, look for your shots, and see if you can get hot. And if he's hot, Nick Nurse can give you more minutes. And if he's not, you know, maybe we'll try something. I don't know. The bench is not very deep right now with all the injuries. So, and then the last thing is, before I go to three stars, is that OG came back. He was solid. He played good defense on Doncic, in the sense that he got Doncic to move to the spaces that the defense wanted him to go to. Stayed with him for the most part. Got crossed up one time, but everything else, you know, he stayed with him. And if you look at it, Doncic shot 5 of 14 from the field and had 7 turnovers. So, you know, it was obviously Doncic also had 19 free throw attempts, like a James Harden-esque performance. So that balanced it out. But, I mean, you know, OG blocked Doncic. OG played some pretty good defense. Offensively, OG wasn't as assertive as I necessarily want him to be. We've seen him, especially, you know, that game against the Kings, that game against the Pelicans. OG was just really, really looking for his offense. And so it was really a shame that that Kawhi swipe, you know, knocked him off his rhythm a little bit. But, you know, for the most part, I thought OG was solid. And, you know, it's hopefully he doesn't miss a beat, because he is a very important player. I do want to see him sort of expand his role. You know, today, for example, he had a hard driving layup into Luka Doncic, which I thoroughly enjoyed. And he finished the layup. So, you know, more of that from OG, but obviously first came back from injury, not seeing him at full rhythm, but hopefully he does get back into rhythm. So your three stars, as you could have guessed, number one, Norman Powell, 26 points, 6 rebounds, an assist, a steal in 32 minutes, 9 of 15 shooting from the field, 6 of 8 from deep, 2 of 3 from the free throw line. I love that. Norm, please, I love when you play like Kobe instead of playing like Juan Dixon. Just keep doing that. Don't go back to the Juan Dixon performances. I don't want to see a 1 for 7 tomorrow or Monday against the Hornets, I think. Don't give me a 1-7 next game, all right? Please, just stay, not even 26 points, but give, you know, maybe like 12, maybe like 13, kind of stay around that area. I would love it. Number two star, I'm going to have to Fred VanVleet, 24 points, 5 rebounds, 7 assists, a steal, 8 of 18 shooting from the field, 4 of 11 from deep, 4 of 4 from the free throw line, made a lot of great plays all around, really stepped up for the Raptors when they needed some leadership. And, you know, he didn't close the deal, but I'm pretty happy with his performance. And then third star, I'm going to have to, you know, Matt Thomas, the Asian expectation, 10 points off the bench, 3 rebounds, plus 12 in 17 minutes. Give the Raptors a boost in the second quarter there. And in terms of the Gerald Henderson Award, I'm giving that to DeLon Wright, my guy, Long, 15 points, 4 rebounds and assists. 3 steals in 19 minutes off the bench, shot 6 of 8 from the field. I mean, I'm not surprised. I don't want to disrespect DeLon at all with this Gerald Henderson Award nomination, because I know what he can do. I know what he has provided for the Raptors in previous seasons. You know, this is what he's capable of as a bench guy, especially when he's motivated to come in, you know, hustle, just create for others. And that's what he did tonight. A putback, you know, a 3, stealing an inbound, you know, some transition plays. That's DeLon for you. That's DeLon. He's a very nice bench piece. Doesn't obviously do this all the time, but when he does, it's a huge boost for the team. This actually reminded me a lot of what DeLon did in the Wizards series, which I really appreciated back in 2018. You know, whatever, first round series, but like DeLon had a lot of great games like this. You know, that play where that time where he got into it with what's his name? Kelly Oubre, and got the last laugh at blocking Oubre. Like, you know, I got a lot of positive DeLon Wright moments. So I look forward to when DeLon returns to the Raptors, when the Mavericks are in Toronto. We don't know if DeLon will get a championship ring. I hope he does, because he was on the team last year for a significant portion of it too. And, you know, it's unfortunate that DeLon couldn't reach a contract agreement with the Raptors. You know, they talked extension last year. Couldn't get one done, but I'm happy he got paid in Dallas. It's weird because he was Dallas's kind of second choice, because Dallas wanted Danny Green, but Danny Green chose the Lakers after Kawhi chose not the Raptors. And, that still hurts. But, But yeah, you know, Dallas is not a bad spot for Delonta Landon as a backup point guard on a team that should be challenging for the playoffs, although they've been underperforming a little bit. You know, it's not bad. So that does it for the podcast. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks to KFC for sponsoring the show. And again, as a reminder, the show is available on YouTube this year. The last episode against Portland hit 10,000 views, so that's excellent. That's excellent. I look forward to the program growing. Thank you to everyone for supporting the show, for watching the show. And yeah, I look forward to the program growing. I appreciate all the love, and I'll talk to you on Monday when the Raptors get back to their winning ways.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.